You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Galactic Holonet, welcome to the Scum and Villainy Podcast. Do not adjust your set if you are not hearing your usual voice. Haha, we have hijacked the ship. I am Matt the Mighty Newt, and with me today are Stephen Kim, better known as Rathos. How you doing, Stephen?
I'm alive.
With me also, Devin Monkhouse.
I don't think I'm better known as anything on the internet.
Indeed, and our fellow Patreon, Logan. How you doing today, sir?
Oh, good. And yourself?
Not too bad at all. We have taken over the ship. We have locked the crew in the cargo hold, and we are hijacking this podcast in the name of the Outer Rim Everywhere.
Yeah, it was surprisingly easy.
I heard there was a shim and a glitter stim involved.
Yeah, the password was password. I don't know. That seems bad.
Interesting. Yeah, they have a chef, a janitor, but absolutely no security on this ship. It's wonderful. Well, it's been an interesting few weeks since the last cast. There have been a couple hyperspace trials. Adepticon System Open is in the books. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, cover a little bit of other news. First off, though, let's do what our hosts do and get a little booty section going. Devin, how have you done for tournaments recently and lately?
Well, recently I helped run as Marshall the Canadian System Open. And then at our first hyperspace trial in the Toronto area, I came second. But since the winner had already won a invite to Worlds, I got an invite to Worlds. So I got all the booty that came along with that. And then the store, in fact, made the top four their own little plaques of they spray painted. A bunch of T-70 silver and put them in shadow boxes with a little plaque, and it was really appreciated. Pretty cute.
Nice, nice. Yeah. Well done. What about you, Logan? Anything coming your way booty-wise?
Not really. Just managed to make it out to the Cheyenne hyperspace trial and did fairly mediocre.
All right, all right. We'll cover that in a little bit as well. How about you, Stephen? Anything booty-wise coming your way?
I think the last major event I played in was Toronto System Open, and that was top 16. Since then, I haven't really done anything of note other than play a few locals for the lulz.
Excellent. I did make it up to Adepticon, the System Open. Ended up going 3-2 in the main and 1-1 in the hyperspace qualifier, which was enough to get me the participation prizes I came up there for. I have my alt art Porkins. I am a happy man. And speaking of Adepticon, props to the ship's own Starslinger 72, Tyler Tippett, for winning the entire thing. Tyler had a very good day one, finishing 5-1 with his quad phantoms list. Made his way to day two, had some very tight matches up there until he got to the finals versus Nathan Idy, who was running Rebel Jank, kind of a Han, Nora, Jake Farrell build. Incredibly good game. It may be up on the Gold Squadron podcast YouTube by now, hopefully, and I encourage everybody to watch it. Just a great example of precision flying and possibly another example of why phantoms are something we should talk about. So all in all, it's a interesting meta out there in the extended world.
Whoops.
The hyperspace qualifiers showed quite a bit of diversity there. Our 6-0, we had four people making that. Nathaniel Moore running the Resistance Initiative 5 list. Todd Grubbs, who did Poe and 3 A-Wings. Darwin Schaefer, who made it in with a U-Wing, 2 Ys, and 2 Bs. And in what might be a bit of a rogue list for the first major event it got to see, Michael Wincock with Sinker, Wolf, and 3 Gold Squadron Troopers. That's was a 6-0 showing for a great Galactic Republic list. How's everybody else seen with Wave 3? Anybody got experience with the Galactic Republic or Separatists yet?
I've tried to get some swarms in. I've tried Watt and Seer with a variety of six or seven droids. And it's been okay. Some of the guys locally have been finding success with a couple of Jedi, say three Jedi, or some arcs, one arc or two arcs and Jedi. But
or four of them.
Yeah, or four arcs, sure. That's a local favorite too. So
all I own of Wave 3 is four arcs to the moment, and it's interesting. They're fun to fly. I'm not sure if it's the right call in the hyperspace meta right now, but it sure is fun. Yeah, go ahead.
Kind of like one of those lists you just play that will occasionally do well. It's kind of a gear check, sort of, for a lot of lists.
Okay, I can definitely see that. It's got 36 hull naked, and if you throw the points for shield upgrade on there, that's 40 hull worth of a list they've got to chew through. So
that's pretty gross.
It is indeed. The day two breakdown was actually really interesting from Adepticon. Looking at who made day two, there were 8 rebel lists, 10 empire, only 2 scum, 4 resistance lists, and 3 first order. But I want to give a nice shout out to, and I'm going to massacre his name, Mashish Parizak, Old Para, as most people know him online, for bringing a list that at first glance seemed absolutely ridiculous. Ketsu Onyo with the Shadowcaster title, Fearless and Maul, Old Tarok with Predator, and Talonbane Cobra with Predator. Talonbane Cobra made day two of a system open. That list looks ridiculous at first, but then you realize with the prevalence of phantoms in the meta, Old Tarok and Ketsu are a real good answer to that. He made it to the top 32 with that, and definitely the most original and creative list, I think, that made day two there. I also want to give a shout out to Cascade Games for running the system open. It went off pretty much without a hitch. I don't believe any rounds needed any kind of repairing or delays, so good on them for that. One thing to point out, that in the top 8, there were 11 Phantoms in the top 8 list. 2 quad Phantom lists, the standard Sigma Squadron Ace with Juke, and Crackshot. And then a list with 3 Sigma Squadron Aces and Countdown. So there was pretty much the Imperial presence that was successful was on the back of either Vader, that made it pretty well in most lists, or Quad Phantoms. They are there, and they are, until something changes, possibly here to stay. What's everybody think about that?
Yeah, we saw a list similar to Hassan's, which is the Vader and the 3 Imdars, do very well at the Toronto System Open as well. Yeah, I think the community's been able to identify that was it's a list that's extremely efficient, has, you know, token stacking and punches us really hard. I think back in, Steven, you're going to have to help me remember, when was the PTL Open? Was that in October?
Something like that.
It was in the fall. October, November. We did that. So that's an event we run every year here in Toronto. And that was when we have to bring 3 lists, so it's not exactly, you know, easy to determine, you know, if it's the list or the player. But that was won by Robin, who's a very good local player, and he was flying 4 Sigmas with Juke because you could fit at the time. And I was surprised that Juke was... No, Juke's probably costed all right. I was really surprised when the Sigma Squadrons weren't adjusted in January. So I don't know. We're talking about something that I think probably isn't going to be an issue come June. But if you're flying before June, I mean, looking at the Adepticon lists, like 11th, 12th, 13th, you know, there's just a stack of them in there in the top. So
they were everywhere. I mean, I ran a Whisper soon to your Redline list, and part of me felt that, is it fair to bring Whisper? And Whisper by herself, no, absolutely beatable. And I would go so far as to say a fair list, if possibly a bit undercosted. But the Quad Phantoms, people are out there calling it NPE, a negative play experience. What do we think about that?
I don't know. So, like, I have a distinctly different experience from everybody else because, like, I just don't see, like, I mean, it's a very good list, and it has a lot of maneuverability options available to it, and that's you know, that can be a problem. But I mean, so does 5 A-wings. Like, it's not like this is doing anything that other lists are capable of doing. And yes, you can kind of like shimmy down the board in formation, and like you're kind of like you can kind of dictate the terms of the engagement, which a lot of people don't like. But there are also lots of different ways you can deal with it, and there are so many different variations that are potentially viable right now that it's just hard to say, like, oh, this one thing is the most broken, and like, you know, everyone's going to be flying it, because I just don't think that's the case.
Very true. Would you say that there are any existing hard counters to the Quad Phantom list?
I think Rebel Chunk does really well.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to take damage, but if you just make sure that you're able to focus fire, like if you get your arcs lined up, if you keep your shots on the same target, you'll force them to spend their tokens and you'll get them down. They do only have two evade dice. And they cloak in the end phase now. So, you know, make sure that you are keeping track of what damage you have where, what your target priority is, and get them off the board. And you have to use Leia to your advantage probably two or three times to really catch them in kill boxes.
Yeah.
But, you know. Well,
and the other thing, too, is that, like, so we were, we just mentioned the four arcs, right? 36 health to get through.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's actually possible to they could all shoot into one of them and not one shot it, right?
Right.
And with that's with like basically full mods, if they do three hits and like if the arc runs one of eight, it's still alive, and then now you're shooting the same amount of dice back. If you make one or two of those phantoms have to spend their evade, like then you're breaking up the formation and you have a great follow-up because you can roll past them and shoot out the rear arc.
Absolutely. One of the things someone was actually suggesting was four of the 104th Squadron pilots with Perceptive Co-Pilot, doubling up on the focus for offense and defense, which counters Juke, and then being able to unload with modified shots on them.
And you can do the same thing with the A-Wing, or the Resistance A-Wings.
They're Resistance A-Wings are an answer to absolutely everything, I believe.
Oh, of course. I was going to talk about, I've just got to find the right tab for our event. I opened it up, right? Maybe not. I was going to talk about Kelvin Lau's list because it was two of the generics, the two PS5s, and then a T70. So that's got a lot of chunk. They've all got heroic. You know, you've got this.
There's like a lot of different
check against dice variants, and you've got all these arcs going. And I think something like that, you're going to be able to constantly have guns on the Phantom, so you're going to be pushing through damage and getting them down.
Mm-hmm. You know, they are very prevalent, and I know that FFG had said that when a list seems to be overly popular or dominating the field, not necessarily necessitating an emergency points increase like Triple Upsilon saw, but that would be a major factor in determining points changes, which we'll likely see with the Wave 4 release. Do we expect to see any changes about the Phantoms?
Absolutely. I think that list is going to be nerfed out of existence one way or another. I think part of the problem with it right now is that you have three identical ships and one that is very close to identical. So after you kill one, you have to do the same thing three more times. And it's offense is still really strong and really consistent. So with a 5A list or something like that, after you kill Lulo, a lot of that offensive power is gone. And each ship in that list kind of counters a different thing, but Quad Phantoms counters a lot of things, which is why it's strong and why it's probably going to go up.
Well, I would highly disagree with the fact that if you kill Lulo, that the offensive power in and the A-Wings goes down. If those A's are running the tech that what's the tech that spend
a focus? Advanced optics.
Yeah, like if they're running optics, that offensive power remains like very reliable two hits, like going through on four shots. Like you're gonna push lots of damage through.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but Lulo's the heaviest hitter in the squad.
However, Lulo with three attack dice, heroic becomes less of a factor with Lulo, which is why I've seen a lot of people foregoing heroic on Lulo simply because it's less effective when you're rolling three dice.
And Lulo's also the easiest to kill of the group because for that offensive power, like he can just pop, right?
Yeah, going down to effectively making him defensively a Z95 is a risk, but it's got to be a calculated one. At initiative 5, he can get in position to theoretically arc dodge and get some good shots in there. But if he's taking focused fire, he's going to disintegrate.
But, I mean, I would keep heroic on them because heroic's going to proc more
for defense,
on Lulo on defense. I mean, that's where you need it, right? When you're reducing the dice down, it's more likely you're going to roll two blanks. And you get that reroll, which hopefully will be better than two blanks.
Well, gentlemen, come the next upgrade, are we thinking we're going to see an increase in the ship costs across the board for the Phantoms? Are they going to isolate the Sigma Squadron Ace? Or might they just decide to increase Juke again?
I think just the Sigma. But if they nerf Juke a lot, that won't be bad either, because the N1 with Juke could also be similarly problematic.
I kind of think that... Well, so my personal opinion on it is that I don't think that they need to do anything at all. I think the meta will push it out as people, because like, you know what, the crazy thing is that we've basically every single major event, every major system open has been a new meta for the last 4 months. And like even up until the points changes in another 2 months, like we'll see a lot of hyperspace trials, but like in terms of system opens, not actually, maybe one or two more, I think. I could be wrong. You can correct me if I'm wrong here, right?
No, there's, I believe, Atlanta and Denver.
Yeah.
I think there's some overseas ones that I'm missing.
So, I mean, I think that there's lots of different ways to deal with it right now. I think that people haven't explored it out, like, fully yet. Like, because we don't really know, even after this event, like, I wouldn't be able to tell you what the top... Even saying Quad Phantoms is a top meta ship, like the like number two after that is like a whole bunch of different potential, and we just haven't had enough results to really know what that looks like yet. Because like I don't fear Quad Phantoms when I build my lists out, and like I actually think like 5 A's is like more scary in terms of like a list to like to prep against, because really? Like in like 5 A's, like the variants could actually just kill you, like. It's kind of like the old jousting innate, like a tie swarm, where like, you know, if they roll good greens, it doesn't matter how good your list is, you can't joust them, right? And the A's are worse because they don't have to fly in formation, and with the two dice on with the optics two dice attack, they're so reliable on offense. So like for me, like that's actually a lot more difficult to deal with a lot of the lists that I'm putting together.
Okay. One of the things that people had considered, you mentioned the N1 coming in with Juke, the full throttle ability also that makes Juke so good on a defender. There have been some questions raised about, does Juke need to possibly scale with pilot initiative or see an increase across the board? I think that an increase across the board would pretty much almost eliminate it from play, except on those three ships that get the free evade. And I think that it should stay priced to where if someone wants to run Juke on an E-Wing or Juke on an Ozatuck with Jyn Erso, that's absolutely, I wouldn't say it's the most effective play, but I think the game needs to allow for some of that creativity and not price any particular upgrade out of non-optimal use.
I think that if you priced it maybe per attack die, right? So if you paid 2 points per attack die, you'd see it be 4 points on the two attack die ships, like TIE Fighters and the
And I'm about to point out on the N1 right? why that might be a problem.
Is, oh, they have torpedoes.
They have torpedoes, and Juke does not apply solely to primary attacks. It's just when you make an attack. Do you want a free evade, free Juke, proton torpedo coming at you from, you know, Rick Ollie or whoever their top pilot's going to be?
So sure, so but now you've put like 20 plus points on an extremely fragile ship. That, yeah, like you're probably out of position.
You're spending 44 points plus the 12 on the torpedo, so 16 points on a ship that is actually pretty easy to pop.
Right? That's true. Like, that's right. They only have two agility. Do they have two or three?
Two agility. They
have two agility.
Two agility. Oh, that is yeah. that is a risky move.
So, but they also have that evade every round, which they get to spend.
But if so they're spending it on defense,
one turn. That's
right. No, but so
going to kill.
We're not, on a fan. It's just a proton torpedo, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're higher initiative than them, if you're not though,
it's going to be really interesting because I know that they've got their initiative 5 in Rick Ollie, an initiative 4 in Anakin who can't take Juke, and I think there were maybe another 4 and a 3. I didn't look at the picture too closely, but that's going to be really interesting to see. I know that at the end of this month we're going to see a demonstration game on stream from FFG. So that's going to, I don't know if they're going to put the N1s in there. They've mentioned the resistance transport and the hyena bomber are going to be featured in that. So,
I have an idea that like, cause if people are upset about Juke and Quad Phantoms in the N1s, like for me, even though this would be a pain for me to have to program, like, I would like to see it basically scale based on how many are in play. So if you have one in play, it costs less than if you have four in play.
The number of Jukes, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, yeah. Because a similar question was brought up concerning Leia as a crew card, if she's under-costed for her ubiquity now. And someone brought up the idea of pricing Leia based on how many ships are in your squad.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with that because, like... I don't like, first of all, like you're never going to get her really into a list where you can get like six ships with Rebels. That's also good. I think, I mean, it would be pretty tough. Like you'd have to run her on like a really, really cheap ship and then run a bunch of Z95s.
Right. And that's, you know, limited to extended at the moment.
Yeah. So you're like doing 3, 4, 5 ship lists anyway. So like so the scaling on the points, I don't think really would work out properly maybe, but
she's, I mean, probably fine. Like three at 4 points, it's not an auto include. At 4 points, it's just like if you plan for it and it's something you want to use, great. At 2 points, it's just it's staple to every Rebel list.
Right. And as you've mentioned, 6+ ships and the headhunters, I suppose the answer to that is wait and see what Blair does with it.
wasn't Blair flying a TIE Swarm?
I just erased that from my mind because that just doesn't fit with my paradigm of the universe at all.
But we can't build point caustic on how Blair uses them because he's only one man.
Right.
That's also not proven.
Like, so you can't
looking more caustic and Juke.
Sorry,
I'm just gonna bully my way through here. They did well at Adepticon 2. And the N1 has the same durability as a Phantom. It has 3 hit points. So Juke either needs to scale with the number of ships or it needs to scale based on if you get a free evade every turn or not.
The thing is, the Phantoms are throwing 3 red dice while the N1's only going to be throwing 2. I think that makes Juke significantly less of a threat on them, especially when they're not able to have Juke and a mod.
But if they can take that torpedo too.
They could get Juke and a mod in the same manner, but they've got to do that speedy maneuver to do it. It's not a guaranteed flip like the Phantoms have. You know, their free agility to trigger Juke is conditional on a 3, 4, or 5 speed maneuver.
They also don't have linked actions, right? So, I mean, part of the problems with the Phantoms are you're having repositioning, free evades, and a focus, right? Whereas these N1s, you're going to get, you got to go fast, and you get the free evade, but you're either going to stay put and take that focus, or you're going to boost a barrel roll. So it doesn't have any linked actions.
I think the main advantage of the Phantom is because of the cloak decloak mechanic, you're able to put your squads into positions that a lot of other ships are just not capable of doing, and you're able to do it in formation. So like that's going to give you a bigger tactical advantage, so that when you do have juke, like it's just going to hit harder.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Now, I didn't run the numbers on it, but it's also interesting to see how many lists with Phantoms at Adepticon did not make the cut. So it's less of the list is an auto win, but that it's a very, very effective tool in the hands of a good pilot who knows how to fly it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hate referring back to 1.0, but it's not... And again, speaking of old para, it's not, I don't think it's Paratani levels of abuse, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably like, you know, quad TLT. Like it's there. It's something you got to get through. You got to have a plan. You got to practice against it. Sorry about that. And then, you know, you're probably going to be fine. If you run into a very good player with that list, you're going to have issues. But, you know, it'll artificially inflate the you know, some, you know, middling players into later rounds. So you just have to know that unless you have confidence in the other player to be good.
So right? I'm looking at the breakdown of like just kind of like eyeballing where they are like showing up in the Adepticon like breakdown. Like
right.
They're like pretty much scattered all throughout the entire list, like the entire like ordering. So like there are a bunch of people at like in the top 16, and then like a very, very standard distribution going across down from 17 to 250, right?
Right. So it's not just a list anybody can pick up and autopilot their way to victory with.
I don't think so.
Doesn't feel like either.
All right. So it seems to be that, you know, Steven's point is that the meta will take care of it. There seems to be a bit of a consensus that maybe we'll see a points increase on it. I like to kind of close the book on that one with the axiom that if you see a list that's overpowering, there are three things to do. One is complain about it. And I think we're seeing enough of that. Two is just to play it and be what's good with it. Or three is to do exactly like Steven says and figure out what beats it. Quad Phantoms is a beatable list. It's very good right now. I encourage anybody who can get their hands on it, play a couple rounds with it, find its strengths, find its weaknesses. Maybe you'll want to run it at your next extended event. Maybe you'll expect to see it. So it's definitely going to be in the conversation for a while, I fear.
Can I throw one more thing in there?
Absolutely.
So the other thing is I think we're seeing a larger uptake in the Sigmas right now because coming up to this event, everybody knew that it was going to be good, but people didn't know what else might be good. So it might see more representation right now because like if you had asked someone what was going to be good like 3 weeks ago, I don't think people would have had a lot of good answers, but people did know already that Sigmas were gonna remain good.
Right. I mean, they topped Eindhoven as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, moving on from the extended over to the hyperspace format, we did see, like I said, a good spread of lists making the top of the hyperspace qualifiers, but we've also had a number of hyperspace trials recently. Down in New South Wales, Australia, we saw a Lando, Wedge, and Luke list make a hyperspace trial. Over in Nuremberg, Germany, it was Vader, Soontir, and Duchess. Down in Texas, Eric Larson won with Darth Vader, four Obsidians, and Wampa. And up in Cheyenne, some D Yoon, never heard of him, won with a TIE Swarm. So it may be, I mean, from just looking at top results, it seems that hyperspace is a wide open format. But Steven, you've disagreed with that.
I just think that, my opinion is not so much that hyperspace isn't a wide open format. It's more that like hyperspace and extended are almost the same format. Like in terms of like what's at the top right now, like with the exception of the Sigmas, like all the stuff that's good in hyperspace is, I think, also good in extended as well.
Really? Because I saw a couple, you know, there were definitely some TIE Swarms on the table at Adepticon, and we're seeing them in top cuts at extended events. There are a lot less extended events to really choose from, so I think it's small sample size there. But you think that we're going to see maybe at Denver some separatist and possibly Republic lists making the top cut?
Probably not.
I don't know, man. Like, there's some good ones out there.
There's a few. I just I think we're gonna have to wait until wave four for the lists for like the new factions to really start picking up steam. Having played a bunch of games now with separatists, like, I feel like there's something missing, and I'm pretty sure that that's going to be the Hyena Bomber. Probably running two Hyenas and five or six droids, depending on how luxury you or Cadillac you want them, is probably going to be really good. I've been enjoying like Watt and Sierra and some droids, but man, like practicing for the hyperspace trial, the more I played with the separatists, well, I had 2 days of practice with them, but you know, whenever the droids would just die, I was always like, man, I wish I had a TIE fighter. It would have lived. And that's like, that's a weird thing to feel, because TIE fighters, they don't live.
Right. They were iconically the bottom of the barrel, fragile little ships. The idea was they won by quantity over quality.
Which we have the Vultures now for. I don't know. I play a lot of TIE Swarms. I've played TIE Swarms since, you know, the, you know, 1.0 wave four. But I wouldn't play a TIE Swarm in extended right now. There's just too much going against it. Whereas, I don't know, I won my invite with a TIE Swarm. So
like, wait, but like what in extended would destroy a TIE Swarm compared to what's already in hyperspace?
A little more of the rebel chunk. So it wasn't as bad before the recent additions to, am I crazy? There was stuff added, right? They added
extra right. The B-Wing, yeah, and the A-Wing, as well as the TIE Interceptor, the TIE Bomber, and then the Headhunter and the Star Viper.
Yeah. So I don't know if we're seeing a lot of that. But in extended, certainly the Draya Swarms are probably better if you want to fly a swarm. That's about it. And same with the Bandit U-Wing spam.
The Liz Kalen took to the win, for example.
Yeah. I would say that I think those lists swarm a little better than the TIE Swarm in extended. Mm-hmm. But in hyperspace, the TIE Swarm has a lot of legs. We've seen the Empire do very well, and I'm very happy to see that.
Do you think that the techniques and skills it takes to fly a TIE Swarm adequately will translate well to Vulture Swarms in the Separatist faction?
Absolutely not. They're completely different. Like, having a lot of ships on the board and like handling that is a skill, but you're not going to be flying, you're not forced to fly the Vulture Swarm together, like, smashed together, right?
It's like asking if like a Z95 Swarm is going to be feel the same as a TIE Swarm. They're just,
yeah, exactly, right?
Okay.
Because like the TIE Swarm, you're tied in with Howl and Iden into a range one bubble, and you have to keep your six or seven ships in that, right? I happen to fly a Striker with my Swarm, and I'm able to do that pretty handily at this point, but it's extremely difficult to get down. And with the Vultures, all of their networked calculations are all range one, but all of the sort of larger powers, whether you're talking about Seer or Watt or DFS 311 and some of these other things that are coming down the pipeline, they're all 0 to 3. Kraken is 0 to 3, right? So you're not necessarily constrained in the same way that a TIE Swarm is, right? And there are people who have flown TIE Swarms in the past without Howl Runner, where you just sort of break them all up, and as long as you're good at, you know, collapsing the arcs and like keeping, you know, a high rate of like guns on target,
right?
And keeping time on target, it's really important. So that's sort of a skill, right? Like I guess what I'm trying to say is a vulture swarm is probably more analogous to, as Steven said, a Z swarm or some of these like rebel swarms we're seeing, where you can spread out a bit and cast a wide net. You'll always want to keep them close together, but they don't have to be in a formation.
I wanted to like also throw in, so like one of the things that I've seen some people play, and I think that the separatist swarm has potential, like actual real like competitive potential, but it hasn't, no one's been able to really crack it yet. And I personally think it's like the key of it is around that the solitaire dude who like adds the evade result. You can spend a calculate token to add an evade result.
Yeah, that's good.
Right. DFS 311, I believe.
Sure. But like there, like if someone can figure out, because like if flying it is so different from any other ship, and you got to think of like its blind spots are a lot different than other literally every other ship in the game. So like you kind of
what's a KB or K2B?
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So like the advantage is that like if you can figure out how to run a swarm with that ship, and now you've got like, because it's doing the thing that no other ship can do in the game, which is add evade results, right? Like old school evade, right? And it's being shared throughout the entire group, right? Now you're mitigating some of the downside compared to a standard TIE swarm with this result, which you have lots of calculate tokens flying about, enough to potentially protect your swarm.
Well, the issue with, or I found with K2B4, is you don't have Kraken. So you can't take, there's lots of calculates flying around, but unless your droids are finding a way to get those tokens, or you're extremely cognizant of your token management and who's going to get shot and where you need it to be, right? So I just you can't run the precise hunters.
Right. And it's a very different list, right? And so it's not what like you thinking about when you're running, but I think that.
And like, if you're spending it, you can't use the energy shells, the vast, because you're running the trade droids.
It's like other in other swarms, like some ships are just not going to shoot, and because they're spending their time being defensive, and some are going to shoot the ones that you want to have close up. Like it really comes down to like it comes down to token management, which is something that a TIE swarm typically doesn't have to deal with, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, okay. It does, but you just want to preserve them as much as possible.
The other thing about K2B4 is your opponent can choose to take a strain. Which, if I'm shooting you with a ship that's not getting shot this turn, I'll just take it and do a blue maneuver the next turn. So it can potentially have no real effect.
Right,
and strain only affects one attack, right? Like, as soon as the ship is attacked, defense returns to normal.
Exactly, it's removed after you become the defender or do a blue maneuver. And that's an interesting thing that the other swarms we've seen... less with the Z95s, but Drea and Howlrunner specifically, you have passive mods because of one of the ships in there. There's kind of network calculations almost behaves like a passive mod. It's robbing Peter to pay Paul in most cases, unless, of course, you've got Kraken out there to provide those extra three charges. I don't know if it's going to be very interesting, because we're seeing a bunch of different builds come out there, some running Watt, some running Seer. Folks do really like Grievous. If you're bringing Kraken, are you going to carry him on a Belbalab or the Sith Infiltrator? There's so many options out there that I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this meta develops. Hyperspace is possibly like the Wild West right now. There's no one overly dominant format, except that one of the things we are seeing is... Darth Vader is probably making an appearance in more lists than any other single ship. Whether it's Hate Vader, whether it's FCS, whether it's Afterburners, we're seeing a whole lot of Darth Vader out there. Is he the king of hyperspace right now?
Definitely not. Definitely not. Not the king of hyperspace. He's good. He's very, very good. But There's lots of good ships right now at six as well.
Especially since Soontir Fel's now back in the conversation.
And we've got Anakin and Poe too, right?
Yeah. Kylo too. The Silencer is just such a beefy chassis, mm-hmm. right? Like if you play it conservatively, it can be really rough to deal with.
Right. And even as an I-5, you know, I don't think anybody will doubt that Kylo is one of the aces of the format.
Yeah. Well, you just use Quick Draw or whoever else is in the list to kill the I-6, and then he's an ace.
All right. Other issue that we had, Devin, you mentioned that you helped TO the system open up in Toronto, and you wanted a little editorial time to discuss something that came up in that.
Sure, I can. Ricky, more than welcome to edit out my soapbox. I just wanted to, I don't often get invited to do these things, so I figured, why the hell not? This was my third, the Toronto System Open was my third premier event that I've done for X-Wing in Canada. And I was informed with less than a week to go before the event that there was no marshal and no head judge. And that if I was not interested in being the marshal, then the marshal would be someone who has never played X-Wing, and the head judge would be someone who hasn't played since 1.0 or Wave 12 1.0.
Ooh, less than optimal.
Yeah, not great. So I was on vacation with my wife in Montreal, and there's a bit of misinformation out there about whether we followed Glendale or not, and we followed the Glendale rulings. I'm not sure why that was in contention. And we provided a few extra clarifications that I typed up with the help of some of very good players I know and some wine in Montreal. And I think we had a very successful event. Now, what I wanted to comment on was, we are volunteers for the most part. We're doing this out of the goodness of our hearts. I certainly would have rather played or cast it on the day of. And if anybody has an issue with that, or how the events are run, I'm a TO and a tournament organizer, certainly first and judge second. But they're more than welcome to come and help out in Toronto. Just give me a shout. My big issue is not necessarily that people took umbrage with how the Talon roll was ruled. Certainly, that's how we interpreted it on the day of, and if that's incorrect, that's incorrect. But if that happens, and you're not at the event, don't try and call a judge. Don't contact a judge. Don't try and change a ruling or affect a ruling, at the event. If the ruling has been made, it's the ruling for the event. If the marshal has said something, has made a ruling one way, we have to be fair. We have to say that that's the way it's going to be for everyone. We have to rule the same way. I would ask that, the community thinks before overreacting, and certainly texting your friend in an event, messaging them, having them come over and talk to judges or cause some sort of issue is, inappropriate. And I'm not trying to be, how can I put this? I don't know. Anyone can jump in with any question, but, as marshal, at the time I made the ruling, I was running a top 16, 60 person qualifier, and we had three hangar bays going at the same time. And as well, there were a variety of issues with the app that we were having. I'm glad to hear that there was nothing at Adepticon, but certainly we were having to correct upwards of 30% of all the results that were given in every round. So, judges are busy, judges make calls, and sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. I certainly haven't agreed with judges that I've called over when I called them over to make a call. I have not agreed with their call, but you know, they make the ruling and you run with it. You know, that's the way it is. So I would just say, you know, I just wanted to, I don't know if I've made sense here or not.
You make great sense in that, you know, judges are occasionally fallible.
Absolutely.
And sometimes a call is made, and I think you make a very good point that it's often, and I can see this especially from Mateo's point of view, important to keep the event running than try and backtrack on a call. Now, the community being what it is, sometimes that's going to be a meme for months on end afterwards, and sure, that's just the nature of the beast. But
I've been there before. You know, I was the marshal at the Canadian Nationals where we had the harpoon shenanigans on the final table with the Howard brothers. Mm-hmm. You know, and I wasn't the table judge. I wasn't at the table. I was not aware of the situation until, you know, they came over and explained it to me. And we had made an announcement at the beginning of the day, right? We were not going to rewind. And rebuild a game state in a previous turn, right? I can't, and that's how we ruled it for 3 days, right? I can't go and treat the final table, you know, like they're special. They can't get, I do not give players special treatment, right? The game state was bad. The table judge missed it. I wasn't at that table. I was also marshaling Armada at that tournament, so I happened to be away. And you know, I think the casters there, if we want to have casters, and both situations have involved, we're on stream, right? So I think if we want to have these games recorded, and if we want to have these games published and broadcast, you have to think of the judges as refs. I'm going to make a sports analogy as a non-sports guy, so that's fine. You can yell at me as a ref all you want. I don't care. I'm not going to take it personally. Calls are good. Calls are bad, right? Bad calls happen. We move on. I move on. It's no hair off my back, right?
Absolutely.
But for Gold Squadron, for VTTV Live, for Back to Dials, whomever's broadcasting it, you have to think of them like, and they got more heat about Harpoon, and they got a little bit of heat about the Talon Roll thing. You got to think of them like TSN. You got to think of them like Sportsnet, right? If a ref makes a bad call, you don't call up Sportsnet and be like, hey, that call was bad, right? You got to give these guys some slack, and there, I think that the, you know, Dion's and Victor and Travis's policies are sensible, and you know, if they start policing games, it's a slippery slope that they should not.
I find it just amusing that the idea of calling up a broadcaster to complain is pretty much the entire reason for the existence of sports radio.
Oh, for sure, but
yeah,
I won't mention that you also were able to do that for golf. But that also went really badly.
Right. And I think that overall, it's that we're still in a state with 2.0 of being barely 6 months into the competitive game. We're still seeing an FAQ develop. I think that the community FAQ that's being built right now and that most tournament organizers are running with is a great asset to the community. Occasionally these errors will come up, and you're right, bad calls do get made. I think that as a community, we're chill enough to, no one's going to take it personally. No one's going to say, hey, you know, you just don't run Talon rolls in Canada anymore. But
no, you know, I mean, I get it, and I get the memeing, like that's fine. Like I said, like I remember I was at an event and Grasser came up to me and handed me a bunch of a better call Paul, like it's funny. Fine, right? Like I can't go back in time, like I can't put myself at that table when it happened and like fix it.
Absolutely. Right?
I can't go back in time and change the Talon roll ruling, which, you know, the FFG has come down one way, but certainly the rules reference was problematic, and that was our issue at the time. You know, and I would rather make a call that a player can't do something when it's in question than if they can. Because I find that a more conservative and safe way to judge. And other people differ, and they have other ways of judging, and that's fine. I mean, I have a lot of respect for Ian Hamp, who helped me with the rulings, and I've met him at several events, and I'm not sure if he could pick me out of a lineup, but you know, I've always had a pleasant interaction with him, and Chico's helped me out running, I think he did tech support while he was on vacation for one of my events with CryoDex. So, you know, they're great guys. I think I was Brent Wong's Cheeto mule at one point. We were smuggling him Canadian Cheetos into the States. So, you know, I have good relations with those guys, and I wish them well with the community rules. So, you know, I've got nothing but good hopes for it. I hope that they, you know, behave and continue working in a way that's community oriented and, you know, is able to build, you know, faith and I'm looking for another word.
You know, goodwill.
Faith in them and faith in some, yeah, faith and goodwill, you know. And I think a lot of people don't realize how much of the X-Wing, and I think, you know, so that I'm not the only person talking anymore, I certainly think Steven can talk about as well how much of this community relies on just a bunch of guys giving their time because they love the game. And that's what we all are.
Don't throw me into your talent roll nonsense.
Well, no, I mean, and he makes a good point. I mean, Steven, you've probably undisputably created one of the, or taken over and adapted one of the most useful community resources out there, and yet another squad builder.
Yeah, let's not overstate my achievements. I did not create anything.
No, you've been updating it and making sure that kind of thing is kept going. And that's an example of how much I think this community as a whole, from the organizers, from the people at FFG, from the people on Reddit and the forums, to the marshals and the volunteers who help run these events, they've made it a kind of community where everybody can feel their voice is heard. And at the end of the day, we all enjoy shooting space bullets and flying ships across a table. I've done a number of competitive hobbies, from Magic to wargaming, and by far the X-Wing community is the most laid back about, it's almost like fly casual is a, not in a don't take the game seriously way, but in that it's recognized as we're playing a game. And just like you said, Devin, these are volunteers out there that there's never any malice to it. It's, yeah, bad calls happen, but remember that the TOs and the marshals who run these are doing it, you know, without pay. They're volunteers out there. Be kind to them. You'll miss them when they're gone.
I mean, yeah, the oddest thing to me was, like, on Reddit, someone accused me of, like, trying to change how the game worked, and like I had a secret agenda on like slipping this talent roll ruling in, and I was like, I don't understand why anybody
in the pocket of Big Sloop.
Yeah, yeah. Right, like sure buddy, like
oh my god, can I be in the pocket of Big Sloop? I absolutely right? want that.
Like I don't have a lot of time for people who like go nutso over some of this stuff, where it's just like, all right, but like until my event is over, I'm right.
Exactly.
When my event is over, I can be wrong, and you can say whatever you want then. Like, but that's unfortunately that's the ruling that was made, and like there was some ambiguity, and we chose to, you know, interpret it the way we did.
All right. So, well, hopefully, getting that out in the open will put any of the conspiracy theorists to rest.
You know, it all just quieted down. So you know. Just stir everything up again.
All right. Well, I am hearing some odd noises from the air ducts, and from the security droids, they are telling me that somehow Blair has gotten into the air ducts and he's not looking happy. So that's probably our cue to head for the escape pods, guys. As we are retreating, anybody got some final shout outs here?
I'll shout out the Back to Dials community and the local Colorado community. We're pretty great up here, and I hope that we can see you all for the Denver System Open.
Indeed. Now that Carson Ray is a local to you guys as well, so
I just want to say that I still don't really like Diyun. people might have the opinion that we're friends now. That is not the case. It's a ceasefire.
I have to say, though, Steven, that after watching him fly the TIE Swarm so well, that my opinion of him has gone up quite a bit after he crashed and burned
at the Toronto system. When you go from zero to, like, two, I mean, that's like a 200% increase, right?
I suppose.
Yeah. All right, so a reverse shout-out to Diyun.
And I just want to thank... everyone out there. I've got my team across Canada. I know, I don't want to spend a lot of time, but we've got a great community up here. So if you're up in Canada, we're not just Toronto. We've got the Millennium Condor guys and Montreal Squadrons, and there's even players in New Brunswick and BC. I think the only place we don't have organized play in Canada is Saskatchewan. So people in Newfoundland are playing, and I've spent, 2 years in this community, two years trying to, like, sew this giant country together. But yeah, I want to give a shout out to all those community organizers out there who, feel like there's, no one there to help them. Just reach out, not to me necessarily, although you're more than welcome. But there's always someone, and we're all friendly, and just give us a shout. And if you want help running a little tournament, there's tons of people who want to help. So
excellent.
Yeah.
And I'll just give a quick shout out to my Kansas City crew that came up to Adepticon and comprised almost 10% of the field in the main tournament from Missouri. Shout out to Star Slinger himself, Tyler Tippett, who took home the trophy from Adepticon, and to all our fellow patrons. Hopefully we can take over this cast again sometime, but it looks like Blair's coming at us with a hydro spanner, so we need to get ourselves out of here. On behalf of Logan, on behalf of Devin Monkhouse, and Stephen Kim, I'm Matt the Mighty Newt. Good hunting, everybody.
See you at Worlds.